You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
It is Tour Live. It's Neil Atkinson with Mike Bancall, with Keogh Molyneux and with Gareth Roberts to talk about Liverpool's fantastic 2-0 win in the San Siro. Your comments will come through as the show wears on. We'll also be looking ahead to Norwich. We've got Sam Meegan. We've got Matt Parish speaking to Harriet Pryor. Everything that you need if you're listening to this as Tour Live. But if you're enjoying it as Tour Live, if you're enjoying it in person with us right now, you'll be seeing some happy faces in a minute or two. Mike, you know, we can be... You want Liverpool to be remarkably fluent at all times, and maybe there's a bit of a chat about the lads who've gone away to Africa lacking a teeny little bit of rhythm since they've come back from the little bit that we've seen so far. So, you know, Liverpool don't pull Inter apart, but they have opportunities to do so in what was, you know, pretty intense conditions, a sticky pitch, which I think didn't help Liverpool's sense of fluency. But all of that, you know, in the first half there, Liverpool still, to me, looked like the better side. I'm not sugarcoating anything there. I think they just shade it in that period of time. But it is worth pointing out, Inter Milan always dangerous, hit the bar.
Yeah, I think both teams in the first half have chances to create chances. I think Liverpool do so more often than Inter Milan, obviously, and we are a constant threat throughout. And it's just one of those games where there are times you're going to have to suffer. It's not going to be a bed of roses throughout. It's going to be a game where you are going to have periods where you suffer. And I think what pleased the manager the most is that when Liverpool have to defend, they defend very capably.
Yep.
And I think none more so than Virgil van Dijk, who's absolutely fantastic on the night. And I think the fullbacks, we often speak about them being, you know, front foot, quite attacking, quite, you know, progressive. But I think they do the defending quite well. I think Trent Alexander-Arnold, we speak a lot about him not being a good defender, or not us, sort of, certain sections of maybe football fans, you know, speak about him not being a good defender. But I actually thought his back foot defending yesterday was quite good. So
yep.
All in all, it's a really, really good performance, and one that we can be proud of and hopefully build on.
It was a throwback for me, Gareth. You know, I've seen Julián and Benitez teams end up in European competition, end up in games where it's maybe not going the way you'd hope all the way through. You know, you've got to respect the institution of Inter Milan. You've got to respect the San Siro. You've got to respect the fact that they're the champions of Serie A, the Serie A's best team. It was a big night for Italian football last night, and they were determined to make it as hard as possible for Liverpool. And Liverpool stand up to it. For me, that's the best part. Liverpool stand up to it in this one.
Yeah, they're not mugs, and you're not going to be playing mugs at this stage of the competition. They've got a good record at home. You know, they've got the standing in Europe, albeit that they haven't been at this stage for 10 years. But even that, you know, that's a reason that you want to perform when you reach there.
Yeah.
And I thought their manager talked before the game about saying he wanted to be front foot, he wanted to have a go at Liverpool. And I kind of saw it and thought, yeah, I've heard that before. And Liverpool will just outplay, yeah. But it didn't go that way. You know, the way the match started, it was them creating chances. It was them causing Liverpool problems. They were getting a lot of people in the box. And look, they went for it, and fair play to them. And, you know, I think if you were watching the game as a neutral, you probably really enjoyed it. I think in the commentary at one point, they said something like, you know, for a 0-0, at that, which it was at that point, it'd been a really exciting, interesting match to watch. It wasn't quite like that when you're invested in it, of course, and you're a bit like, come on, Liverpool. Like, I'm not really into them hitting the bar yet. Do you know what I mean?
And he really hit it, by the way. It was one of the things I've most seen hit the bar in my life, Gareth. I couldn't believe it didn't go in. I've never seen a bar hit like it. It goes this mad angle, like a squash shot as it comes off.
but, you know, Sadio should have scored the other end.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's... Obviously, the substitutions change it massively, and then we end up, you know, fully deserving what we got. Because I watched, like, the analysis, and the analysis goes on for a long time on BT, and they do about three different shows afterwards. And I was reading something, but I still had it on. And I just thought it was interesting how like the analysis changed from in the match, immediately post-match, to like an hour or so later. And an hour or so later, they were like, Liverpool have done really well there. You know, Inter Milan haven't had a shot on target. Liverpool have dominated possession. Or, you know, all of this kind of stuff. And you're like, yeah, you know, when you look, it's one of them performances that I think as time goes on, it'll get better. At the time when you were in it, you were like, oh, Liverpool haven't started that well here. They're getting at us down the wings and things like that. But there was a good line today. I mentioned it before on Talk and Reds. A good line in the Times report, which was saying about Trent and Robbo having, I think it was 42 and 41 games respectively now in the Champions League. And you're like, I think that's what shone through for me last night, the experience, the nous. And you think about all the different versions of Liverpool we watched over the years. We always wanted that. You know, we used to look at the squad or the first team and say, well, how many of these have won something? Well, now it's pretty much all of them. Do you know what I mean? And I thought that now shone through in the end, because it would be easy for heads to go down the way we started the game and I'd be a bit sort of overwhelmed. But they got themselves back into it and then went beyond that and won it, which was absolutely brilliant.
There's a thing here where you live in your feelings when you watch a football match. You're desperate for Liverpool to win. You're desperate for them to succeed this season. So that 15 minutes after half time, you know, it felt like it genuinely, you know, it felt like we were playing against some sort of combination of Brazil 1970 and Manchester City of 2018. It was, you know, you felt like, oh God, there's never going to be a way out of this. And Liverpool just defend it. You know, in hindsight, one of my things here is that Liverpool just defend it. Kanate and Van Dijk, they do the job of central defenders in the same way that sometimes, not that he was called upon, the goalkeeper save stuff is the job of a goalkeeper. Kanate and Van Dijk, we're not used to seeing them have to defend so aggressively and actively. They were called upon. They were both brilliant.
That's it. Like, I can't remember a game where our centre-backs have so much to do in terms of, you know, a team piling pressure on us, apart from when we play teams like Man City or something like that. Inter started that second half really good, and they were on our brief. And it, like I say, it was a period where it felt like it was drifting away from us a little bit, and there's a possibility they could score. But Liverpool weathered it really well. I'm not going to move on too quick, but the substitutions, which when he took Fabinho off, especially for me, I was like, is that a way to balance a midfield? And it did. The substitutions worked, and
he showed what we know, didn't he?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I'm sitting, that is like, I don't understand how that sorts out being overrun in midfield, taking off Fabinho. But the substitutions changed the game, and having, as you said before, we've longed for this, to be able to bring a £50 million winger off the bench, and feel strong and feel that we had the depth. It paid off last night, didn't it?
It does, Mike. And you know, in the comments, someone said there, you know, if Jürgen had not made the subs at that point, we'd probably be having a different conversation. I think what's dead interesting to me is the nature of those subs. The fact that he does make the really big call on Fabinho, but what he actually gets from those players, and then by extension Thiago, is all of them just keep the ball. All they do is they just come on and keep the ball and move Liverpool up the pitch in little quick passes, quicker movements, supporting one another a little bit more, I think, when they're in possession. Less onus to force it. Liverpool just keep the ball, and all of a sudden Inter Milan have got no answers.
Yeah, 100%. I think the subs are like tempo-changing subs. They really help us regain control. And I actually think when Henderson plays as number six, I think he's underrated in that role. I think there's a kind of a spell he has when Fabinho's out injured in 2019. The year we win the league and he plays number six and he does really, really well. And whenever he has a fill-in, but I do think one of his great assets when he plays number six, he moves the ball in one and two touches. He zips it really quickly. It's really one and two touch through the lines. At times when he needs to play side to side, he plays side to side. And I thought yesterday he was really, really key in helping us kind of regain control.
There's a comment as we move through here from someone called Ash. I'm not going to be mean, Ash. He says, has Kanate moved ahead of Matip in the pecking order in Europe? Gareth, I think, as a collective, and I mean Liverpool supporters, and I mean Liverpool supporters who, you know, love Liverpool to pieces, I think we're going to have to worry a little less about pecking orders. We're on four fronts here. It's four different competitions. It's different opponents going from game to game. It's the players left from game to game having different energy levels. In everyone's mind, I think there is this desire, isn't there, to rank the players, to have a pecking order, to say X is the preferred 11. All of this sort of stuff, for me, I think that with one or two obvious exceptions, like Virgil van Dijk as an example, like Mo Salah as an example, Alisson Becker as an example, pecking order's just not going to quite be it between now and the end of the season for seven or eight of those first team slots.
Absolutely. It's a squad game now, isn't it? And, you know, if you watched Jürgen's press conference pre the match, he was talking about, you know, his delight at having the five subs available. And he basically said, and I will be using them, do you know what I mean? and I think that's the way it's going to be from here on in. Like, the narrative around the substitutions on BT, basically, was as though, like, you know, it's all gone terribly wrong and these are playing really bad. And so, you know, he's hauled them all off and he's put all these on. And I was kind of like, well, no, this was always the plan. I mean, you know, it wasn't the plan with Jota, obviously, because there's an injury concern there and that's why Bobby comes on. But certainly the other three around 60, you know, I think we're regularly going to be seeing substitutions around 60 because Liverpool's play relies on energy. And to have energy when you're pushing on four fronts, you're going to have to use the whole squad. So it will be who's in form, who's fittest, who's tested to the best at Kirby that week, whatever it might be. The key thing, rather than talking about who's first choice and who's the first team, is the drop-offs between them. And, you know, if we're talking about there not being much of a drop-off between Matip, who's incredibly experienced, and Konate, who's not, who's only 22 years old, remember, then that's fantastic for Liverpool, because all of a sudden, we've got, in pretty much every area right now, and fingers crossed it remains the case, we've got the strength and depth. We all used to moan about City's strength and depth, almost be like, oh, it's annoying, isn't it? Because if he's out, they just bring him in. You know, we're getting to that kind of level now. So, you know, Diaz, I'm absolutely delighted with him because I was excited as everyone else about him coming in, but I did think, well, how much will we see? Will he have this period, which is almost traditional under Klopp now, that he beds in, that you don't see him that much? I think he's just jibbed that. I think he's not interested in that, Diaz. He wants to play now. He wants to be involved now. He's probably pushing for a place in the cup final, starting lineup and things like that. He's not interested in any period where, you know, he's learning the ropes or whatever. He's straight in, he's on it, and he was great again last night.
He was great, KO. I think there's a physicality about him beyond just the fact that he's remarkably quick. You see him win his own little, you know, he basically wins his own flick on at one point. Last Liverpool player that I saw, that was Emileski. He's very, very smart, very, very clever. But he knows that he can stretch those legs of his. And I think, you know, the subs, the big sub where he does the three, I think that Henderson and Keita offer loads of stability, loads of great touch football. But Diaz makes them go, oh, Christ, we're going to have to drop again here. We're going to have to drop another few yards. And a couple of big balls to him, a couple of big switches from Henderson. It just makes their whole defence go, we've got to go another 5 yards back. And that doesn't half help us regain the advantage.
Yeah, what I love about him is, when he gets the ball, he seems like the first thing on his mind is to make something happen. He's direct and he gets at players. I agree. It's similar to when Jota come in. There wasn't a sort of period which Fabinho had or Robertson had where, you know, they didn't make the starting 11 for a little while. This is a player who's ready to come straight in. And to be honest, what I love about him is that, like, that South American attitude of winning his battles all the time. It happened at the weekend, and it, again, with like, he stretches to make that pass, you know what I mean? And he seems like a player that we've needed, because obviously we've had options off the bench in Minamino and Origi with the very different types of players. This is a player that can fulfil that Mane and Salah role of getting at players, getting behind players, doing things on the byline. I'm excited for him. I think we've done it again. I think we found a real, really, real talent.
He's one, Mike, where the good thing about him is there's an enthusiasm that sort of comes off him. I think you saw it to a degree when he was at Porto when we faced them. But for me, what I love about this right now is, you know, he's just delighted to be part of this Liverpool setup, part of this Liverpool squad. And I think that'll massively help in terms of the managing of everyone's role and minutes. You know, for me, he's got a lot of big 30s in him in certain matches. I suspect he might start at the weekend, and I'm excited about that. But I think he's got a lot of big 30s in him where you feel as though he's going to massively impact matches late for Liverpool, and he's going to do so with an unbelievable level of desire and not a hint of, why didn't you start me in the first place?
Yeah, he plays the game with real, like, effervescence and a real exuberance that is quite refreshing, really. And we speak a lot about how signings are going to impact us, but I actually think it's been really nice seeing how happy he is to play for Liverpool and how happy he is to kind of be around a group and be around the lads. Like, it's just, he just looks so happy and joyous to be here. And I think we speak about squad depth and City squad depth and Bayern Munich squad depth, maybe. I actually think in attack, our squad depth is as good as any in Europe, in fact, the best. So
yeah,
it's really good to have like a player like him of his quality in attack. And I hope he starts in the weekend, because I do think it'll be a good game to start with him and Norwich at home, 3 o'clock on a Saturday. Seems like a kind of perfect chance for him to kind of make a mark in the Premier League. So, yeah, just hoping for more to come from him, because, and as you've all mentioned, there is no pecking order at the moment. Guys like Diaz will have their moments. Guys like Minamino might even have their moments at times. You know, Divock Origi might have a moment. I'm sure he's got one more big moment left for us. So it's exciting times.
Just come back to you on this, Mike. You know, the idea of the subs. The Liverpool have got left, potentially, if they go all the way in all competitions, potentially 25 games left. And they break into 14 Premier League games and 11 what we can call sort of cup games.
Yeah.
Within that, in all 11 of those cup games, the manager is able to use 5 subs. And to me, that's absolutely fascinating. You know, and let's just sort of square this circle even more. By the time after they face Norwich and after they face Leeds, that split then is 12 Premier League games and 11 games where he's got a 5 sub option. And, you know, the extent to which this is now an enormous squad game for Liverpool, you sort of struggle to put it in words. You know, the benches are huge in the first place, and then he's able to make 5 swaps over the course of a 90 minutes. Absolutely everyone's going to be involved.
It is. Like, we all need to be patient and kind of acknowledge that everyone's going to have their moments. I think Joe Gomez is one that I'm sort of thinking about at the moment, because I think he'll be a valuable asset for Liverpool, kind of long-term, also short-term thinking between now and May. And I think he will get his moment at some point. He will get a chance to start a game, hopefully build some momentum. So this is a squad game. And I think about kind of Liverpool 2019 when we won the league, and sort of everyone kind of plays a role in that sort of league winning season. I think about Champions League as well. Everyone plays a role. Shaqiri plays a role. Origi, they all play a role. And I think the same will happen now, but players are going to have their kind of their own moments, their own kind of contributions to make, some less than others, but they'd all have a role to play. And that's kind of what Ponce, I imagine, kind of a good squad that will contribute.
Because everyone's always desperate to talk about Jordan Henderson, Gareth, one of the things that you can end up overlooking is last couple of games, I think, have been quite significant for Naby Keita. Two tough aways in difficult conditions. And I think he's impressed both. You know, I think he has a really good 90 against Burnley. It's a very, very useful half an hour there against Inter Milan. It's important that he gets to build on this. I'm excited for him between now and the end of the campaign too.
Yeah, absolutely. I think he's been neat and tidy for me.
Which is what we want.
Which is what you want when you're in the middle of the park. You know, I think one of the reasons that a lot of people got on Hendo's back the other day is that he gave it away a lot against Burnley. He was much, much better last night. He was in the 90-odd percent, I think, in terms of, you know, finding the man. But Naby consistently over those two games has been pretty, you know, clever, good, what you want, and able to play a part as well. I mean, you know, There's still a big question mark over his future for me at Liverpool. But if you can get something out of him right now, as we're all saying, we need everyone in the squad to contribute all the way through. And I just hope that there's something building now. I really think there is, because I think Burnley was one where I would have loved to have seen what it was like in the dressing room afterwards. Again, it's the same last night in that, you know, even Virgil, obviously Virgil's just incredibly cool every time he's in front of a camera, and was again last night. But there was something about him where he was like, yeah, you know.
He glowed with happiness, I thought, Gareth. Yeah. There was like happiness emanating out of his pores.
It was like he knew how important it was. He knew it was important to almost be under the cosh a little bit and then emerge the other side. All of that's brilliant for confidence and for the psychology of the whole situation. And now we've got two home games coming up. There's cup final places at stake in terms of in the team and stuff like that. So that surely pushes motivation right through the roof as well. And it just feels fantastic. It feels like something's building. And we know with Liverpool that when something builds and everyone gets on board and there's a vibe around games and around the city, that's when we're special. And that's when there's like a bit of a, almost like an emotional edge to Liverpool that I think maybe some other clubs don't have.
Last little thing on Keo is, obviously, we've got to be really clear. The players themselves have been really clear. The manager's been really clear. It's only half time. This is an Inter Milan side that look very capable of putting a big 45 minutes together. So there is a job to be done, a major job to be done at Anfield. You do feel a bit like if Liverpool score the first goal in that game, the hill becomes difficult for Inter Milan to climb. But ultimately, you know, there is another big European night coming with another big reward for it in terms of a quarter final. We couldn't be in a much of a better position, but there is still work to be done.
Definitely. And I think maybe a few years ago, that point would worry us a little bit more. But the fact that we've got a squad full of players who've been to two Champions League finals, lost one, gone on and won one, I think we've got the mentality to make sure that nothing stupid happens at Anfield. They played brilliantly last night. I was impressed by Inter. I think they, you know, there's a reason they're challenging for Serie A. There's a reason, you know, they're running us about because they were a good side. And like I said, they whacked the bar. They put us under the cosh. But it's another European night at Anfield, and I think Liverpool, I don't think they've ever been fighting on four fronts like this coming into like March, you know. So it's an exciting time. And just, I think someone mentioned then, something's building. I love when that happens. Like every season, I can remember watching Liverpool, we get to a moment after Christmas where we get a bit of momentum and we feel like something special is happening. We normally put a new song on the cop as well when that happens, which is happening. So the omens are building up, and I just thought we can go right the distance.
Nothing to be scared of, Mike, just to, you know, to round it off here. Paris Saint-Germain, really good side, got a good result against Real Madrid. Manchester City are through. We're not going to do the half-time chat for them. They are through. Munich drew 1-1 last night. Chelsea are the reigning champions. Beyond that, Liverpool can give all of them a game, and I'd back them to the hilt against three of those four in terms of getting a result. And I fancy us against City as well in the long haul. This is a hell of a season for this European Cup, and Liverpool look as equipped as anybody.
Yeah, we do. I think we are the favourites. I mean, you look at kind of Pep's interview after the Sporting match, and he's there worrying about Liverpool kind of being a pain in his ass. So that says it all. He knows how good we are. And I think there's no club in Europe that thrive on momentum better than us. So kind of when we get into the running around March, around April, May, when the momentum builds, when the cop gets up for it, there's no club better. And I think we will kind of build some momentum. I think we will hopefully win the cup final next week, and that will be kind of another step towards the right direction. Just like, I just can't stop smiling. I'm just so excited. this could be like the season of our lives. You know, these are literally the glory days. These are days that we've waited for our whole lives. And yeah, I just honestly cannot wait to see what happens.
Can't wait to see what happens. One of the things that will be happening is Liverpool will be facing Norwich City on Saturday at Anfield. We'll be talking more about that if you're listening to this as a podcast. But before then, you've got Harriet and John. Harriet speaking to Matt Parrish at the LFC Foundation. John speaking to Sam Meegan. That's coming up now.
And it is John Gibbons for Tower Live, and glad to be joined in the studio. And it's nice just to have guests, to be honest with you now. But also when it's all friends, I've got Sam Meegan here to talk about Rip It Up. So Sam, thanks so much for coming in.
No, thank you for having me, John. It's nice to finally be on.
So people in the city, especially in the music business, will know you well. You've done lots of things, lots of interesting sorts of creative things, but you're here to talk about Rip It Up, so just let everyone know a bit more about what it is.
Yeah, so I run a program in partnership with Sound City. It's called Rip It Up, and it's just it's like an educational program as well as like an applicational, if that's the word, program, whereby people from disadvantaged backgrounds who, you know, want to get the first sort of get on the first rung of the ladder in the music industry can, and it gives them that opportunity, and they also get a bursary at the end of it, which is always quite nice.
Yeah, well, no, absolutely. I mean, and anything that, you know, can support, you know, an emerging band and a young band is vital, isn't it? Because, you know, I vaguely remember being a young musician, Sam myself, but, you know, you can feel like you've got a tight sound and you've got good tunes and stuff like that, but you don't really know to do what next. Do you know what I mean? Where do I take it apart from, you know, playing it to me mates?
Well, that's the thing. I think, you know, similarly to you, I remember, you know, having all the gear and no idea. And I think I was, you know, a good example of a kid who sort of had the hunger to try and do something with the talent but had no idea how to do it. And this is, you know, an opportunity for people so that, you know, if they want to learn how to click into the right places with the talent that they've already got, but with the nous that they need to go that next step, this is giving them that opportunity. But I think the most important bit, obviously, you know, a lot of people sign up because of the money that they get at the end of it, but that is also important because it is a selected sort of process whereby people who we know haven't got access to funds and wouldn't necessarily ever have access to funds before the age of 18 or whatever will have it.
And there's lots of things that a musician could spend that money on, isn't there? And people might not necessarily realise. People might think, oh, you know, you give a 18-year-old kid who likes music, you know, £500, he'll buy a Boss guitar. Whereas, yeah. I mean, he might, but it's more likely, you know, just they'll spend it on promo for a single or something like that, or to get like a booking agent or something, or you know, all these things that like you don't think about necessarily before you're in those moments that can make a big difference.
Well, I mean, one of the things I was really surprised by is that last year's applicants were quite studious. One of them actually bought their first ever laptop, which I was actually really pleased with that one. And another one used it to make a music video in his student's house, which actually I've seen it since, is amazing. He papered over all the walls and slathered loads of blue paint all around it. I can't imagine his landlord was happy, but it looked great, and he spent all the money on, you know, obviously getting the decent video footage and all that stuff. And I think this is the thing, it's, I don't know if many people can relate to this, but when you've had no money and then you get some money, it's often the people who've had none that spend it more wisely and understand, you know, each penny can count towards something more important. And it could be, I mean, you know, it's not all musicians. One of them bought DJ decks as well. I've never bought a set of DJ decks. I didn't think that money could go that far, but it did. Now she's doing shows down in London, which is, you know, it's amazing for her. So, yeah, it's interesting to see where they end up spending it and what they actually get out of it long term. Because that, you know, the money side of it actually goes beyond, you know, the 6 month program they're on. That can go to, I mean, what's the warranty on a laptop? It can be anything between a year and, I don't know, 5 years, depending on how much you look after it. So yeah, that's the exciting bit, in my opinion, seeing them spend it on themselves, because I don't think enough people do that.
Absolutely. No, absolutely, absolutely. I want to give a bit of a shout out to Sound City as well, because you mentioned you're doing this program along with them, and they've been a massive part of developing young musicians in the city for a long time now. When people from outside of Liverpool will be aware of the festival, you know, it's award-winning, we talk about it a lot, and it really showcases, you know, the talent in this city, but also obviously worldwide, and it's all about emerging artists and your next favorite band. But that's one weekend a year, whereas throughout the year they're doing, you know, involved in programs in Liss, they have been sort of a long time really, and they do a lot of good in this city, don't they?
Yeah, 100%. It's just as you were saying it, I feel like their legacy on the face of it is the bookings that they have a knack of doing, which is like 10 years in advance of the artists getting big, and everyone's like, when did you book them?
Yeah.
But the actual benefit that they bring to the city goes unnoticed in terms of just the development of people. You know, I mean, Dave and himself has developed people like Simon Bobbitt, right through to a guy called Brendan Walsh, who's product manager, I think, Universal now. And then, you know, not that I'm up there or anything like that, but, you know, he had a great deal of hand in me and what I've done. And, you know, likewise, if you think about every single person that they've taught or trained through their programs, from either Ripper Up or other programs that they do, you know, it's amazing, really, some of the benefits of being associated with that company.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And they're still doing it. So if people are listening to this and they want to get involved, or they're thinking, oh, you know, I know my uncle's nephew's niece or whatever, there is a rapper or whatever, and how do people, you know, either find out more information or apply?
So they just head to the Sound City website, and there should be a tab along the top that says Ripper Up, and then you just click that and apply. One of the things that I would point out is that it's for 18 to 25-year-olds. It is primarily focused towards people from a Black, Asian and ethnic minority background. That's it, really. Yeah, it closes on the 25th of Feb, and, you know, the actual session starts 9th of March, and they'll be, I think, an hour and a half once a week up until late May.
But it must be exciting to think, you know, that there's all this talent out there and people who are going to get in touch and people who are going to apply. I don't know if you've started sort of looking at the applicants yet, but, you know, there'll be someone in the bedroom in Birkenhead or whatever who's going to absolutely blow you away.
Well, I mean, I was saying to someone jokingly the other day, because I'll be honest, John, like, I have been asked a few times why I do this, given that I already sort of have a job and, you know, do that as well. But I was like, it's the only way I can actually sleep at night, to be honest, because, like, what I do is very much about, you know, sort of, well, it's not helping myself, it's helping others, but with benefits to myself. This is something that I do purely for other people, and I get to see these kids grow. I say that as if I'm old, but I'm not. I'm only 26, but, like, you know, as an example, I speak to a lot of them still now, you know, from last year, and I saw one girl, Lavia, she's just gone off and got a job out of this. Another girl, Jen, who's now working with me a little bit, has also got a job. You know, a guy called Manta ended up doing signing a deal with a label. It's like, it's amazing to think that just a little bit of help and nudge in the right direction, you know, and they've managed to do all this themselves. It's nice to be part of, to be honest. It makes me sleep.
Absolutely. And it's nice to be part of, you know, the what's going on in the city, and obviously encouraging, you know, the talent, because we know the talent's here. And you can see that at the moment in the charts. You know, there's a lovely moment where a couple of weeks ago, I was driving home listening to the charts, seeing where Webster's album was going to place, and obviously got to number three. But then suddenly in the singles charts, there's a young rapper who's in the top 20, Hazy stuff, and you're like, there's still plenty going on here, and that's just 1 week.
I mean, I don't want to get into the whole North-South music debate, but obviously I have a lot of friends based in the South who work in music, and I was saying to just one of them just the other day about how funny I'm finding it that the industry's based down there, but like some of the output from the North and primarily Liverpool at the moment is absolutely insane. Mm. You know, Webster and Hazy being, you know, two very good examples. But then you look at, like, I don't know, Crawlers. I mean, you know, they've done 20 million streams on one single there. Wow. Do you know how hard that actually, like, is in this day and age? You know, there's Court and touring, you know, the nationally quite well. There's loads of examples. Obviously, my mind's gone blank now, but it is exciting. It's an exciting time to be in Liverpool, and I'm just grateful that I live in Manchester at the minute.
Sam, Tom, man, thanks for coming in. So again, you know, if people know anyone 18 to 25, young musicians, as you say, primarily focused on those groups. But you know, Sound City website is the best place to go to find out more.
It sure is, yeah.
Tom, man, thanks for coming in. Nice to see you.
Yeah, it's nice to see you.
And I am now joined by Matt Parrish from the LFC Foundation to chat about some of the things they've been up to recently. But first of all, thanks for coming on, Matt, and having a chat to us.
No problem, Harriet. Good to see you. And thanks for having me.
So first of all, you recently partnered with the Islamic Relief UK and the Liverpool Mosque Regions Network. And it's really interesting work you've been doing. And I think maybe a lot of our listeners won't have heard about it. So can you just tell us a bit more about your partnership with them?
Yeah, I think it's building on really, Harriet, a sort of the club's long-standing support in terms of both food poverty, but also working with, you know, as wide a section of the community of the Liverpool City region as we can. I think the perspective of the food poverty piece, it's sadly the need is, you know, it's certainly not going anywhere. If anything, it's growing. I think what Islamic Relief do and the Liverpool Regional Mosque Network is they recognise that, they feel they can play a part. And through Islamic Relief funding it, we work with the Anfield Stadium team, who are amazing, and they turn things around and they create food parcels. I think the last drive a couple of weeks ago was the 500 food parcels with various community groups across the city, which followed pretty quickly after the Christmas campaign. Something very similar was done. So it's an opportunity to work together, and I think from our perspective, it helps to show what's best about Liverpool, i.e. everyone works together. You know, we're all, whilst I'm not a Scouser by accent, I'm you know, my little boy is now, but the fact that the city and the region was one to sort of help people that need a bit more support.
Yeah, definitely. And you mentioned the boxes there being packed by LFC staff and they're being delivered across the city. Is it something that everyone at the club is really keen to get involved with and help with? Do they love getting involved and being hands on deck?
Yeah, and I think the stadium team at Anfield are unbelievable, and they sort of those sort of unseen people that in the background that do amazing stuff. And sometimes I worry that we ask too much and they just turn it round. But I mean, I think something that we haven't talked about loads is they started doing 1,000 meals a week during lockdown, and which are really around North Liverpool and Kirby and to other groups. They're still doing that, so I need to actually check the sums, but I think it's over 100,000 meals have been delivered, fresh meals that are prepared every Thursday and distributed. So they just, you know, they do that because they can. And I get the sense that some stuff was done during COVID and has stopped, but they've just decided that we've started doing it. It's part of what we do now. I think they actually look forward to the Christmas hampers and making them up. I think it's part of the routine now, and they want to do it and they want to help. And I suppose it's their way of playing their part and supporting.
Yeah, absolutely. And working alongside Islamic Relief, why did you identify that as a specific area that you wanted to get involved with and you felt you could help with?
No, well, we've done work with the Liverpool Regional Mosque Network for some time. We did a Taste Ramadan event not long after I'd started at Liverpool. I was told that there'd be a couple of hundred people down at the pierhead for this event, and I got down and I was to speak on stage, and I think it was about 12,000 people, which was quite daunting. But again, we've done some work with the guys there around running different sessions and programs anyway, and then they've historically worked with Islamic Relief, who have funded work. Islamic Relief in Venice have funded work with ourselves, I think, I know, with the Celtic Foundation, And I think I'm right in saying Aston Villa and some other clubs, Leeds United. So, but I think we were one of the first to work with them. What we have is the local networks alongside the Moss network, and we could get that out to schools, community groups, etc. So it was just a great example of partnership work, and it's all bringing together the different streams to deliver support to those that need it most.
Yeah, definitely. And at the foundation, I know you have lots of different areas that you work in, and one is obviously the food poverty. And I think there has been, it's fair to say, during the pandemic, a stark rise in Liverpool and across the country, really, in families needing financial assistance and help with food. Is that something that you notice, you know, with the work that you do and are keen to help out more and more as much as you can with?
Yeah, I mean, I think the food poverty support work is sort of driven by the Red Neighbours team here at the club, the club CSR team, and it's something that I think they identified with consultation with the community about 4 or 5 years ago, over 5 years ago now, that was a real need. I think, sadly, it hasn't gone away. I think the club are obviously closely attached with supporting the amazing fan supporting food banks movement, which I think I'm right in saying was started by Liverpool and Everton fans here, and is now sort of spreading across the country. It is clearly apparent to us from the young people in the schools we work with. We've had a request, but then I've come in from a school about worried about the kids at over half term and not getting fed. Things, you know, there are initiatives out there. There's the holiday activity and food program, which is new. You know, we know about Marcus Rashford and others using his platform brilliantly to raise awareness to the fact that the need's out there. And it's, I suppose, ultimately it's shocking that in this day and age that need is there, but it's something that we, you know, we feel we can help with. There's something about awareness, there's something about supporting where we can. We were able to donate funding to food banks across the Liverpool City region during COVID, but ultimately that was, you know, that was fans fundraising. That was us. We were the sort of conduit to get it to the food banks, but that was fans saying, well, that's something that's important to them and donating their money.
Yeah, well, as fans, before we move on to talk about kind of the other things you're doing, is what would you say to us, that how can we help? And is it, you know, around taking food on match days or any other things that we can do to get involved?
So, yeah, if fans want to get involved and support in terms of the food piece, the easiest way is to come and donate before games. The guys there from Fan Supporting Food Banks are there, rain or shine, Liverpool games and Everton games. And you'll find a lot of other clubs around the area are now doing it, non-league clubs as well. So please just, you know, don't ever think a donation's too small. You know, it doesn't have to be 2 bags of shopping. It can be, that's brilliant, but it can be a couple of tins. So anything that's longer lasting, I think often hygiene products as well, deodorants, sanitary products, baby products, anything, nappies, you know, none of it will go to waste. So please do, yeah, bring your stuff down to the matches.
Yeah, absolutely. They do great work there, and they're there every single match day, so do donate. There's a couple of other things going on at the foundation. You've got the Barca Legends game coming up at Anfield in March. Tell us a bit more about that and what legends we can expect to see.
Yeah, well, I suppose it's our showpiece event. We were really excited. We sold out the Barca game when it was launched in late 2019. I think we'd sold it out. It was launched in October, and I think we'd sold it out by Christmas 2019, obviously, and we were due to play at the end of March. Obviously, a global pandemic got in the way, and it was cancelled, or it was postponed initially and then cancelled. Finally getting it back on. So, Saturday the 26th of March, playing Barca Legends at Anfield. Ticket sales are going well. I think we're in and around 40,000 sales already, obviously, so we're not a million miles away, but it'd be brilliant to sell out. But the tickets are going far. We've announced Daniel Agger, Maxi Rodriguez, Dirk Kuyt. We're announcing sort of names every week. Rather than announce all at one, we're gradually announcing the names as we go. So we're going to have a great lineup. Hopefully the Barca guys are going to be strong as well. So, and the key point to it is, you know, if we sell out, we should raise around £1 million and all our work, primarily here in the Liverpool City region, and then also alongside Right to Play with Side by Side. So, and it's also a great day. It showcases what we do. It's a great day. It's an opportunity to see some great football and some legends at Anfield. And it's, as I say, it is our key fundraiser, annual fundraiser, and we haven't been able to do it, unfortunately, for a couple of years. So we're looking forward to it.
Well, yeah, definitely great to see it back. And 100% of the proceeds from that go back into the foundation, don't they? So that makes a big difference to all the work that you do.
Yeah, all proceeds come to us, and then we both use that to fund our work, but also to fund others. So we we're contributing towards the Home of A Foundation again, working with Right to Play on the Side by Side campaign, and it also gives us that opportunity to it funds some of our work that we do free in schools. It goes some of it goes towards our football hardship fund, which we run with Liverpool City Council and Everton Football Club as well. So it's it goes across the raft of the programmes we do. But it's, as I say, it's been for everyone. It's been a challenging couple of years to not hold that has been a challenge for us, because I suppose frustratingly it stopped us funding some of the other brilliant organisations that operate across our region.
Yeah, absolutely. It was great to have it back, and great to see you're continuing all the great work that you always do at the foundation, and we love hearing about it. So Matt, thanks for coming on again. It's been great to speak to you today.
No, thanks, Harriet. Thanks for having us.
We are back. It is lovely, lovely, lovely to be back with Kieran, with Gareth and with Mike for the days of our lives, as Mike frames it there, Gareth. And that's the sort of chat me and you can get right behind.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, you know, a game against Norwich City in different circumstances would be one you could imagine Spurs are floating around for it. People are sort of like, the weather's grim and all this. But because of where we are and where we're at and where we're going, it feels like one where you're like, can't wait to get in there and see them again, to be honest. Can't wait to see what the team is. Can't wait to see us score, hopefully, a shed full of goals. I mean, we've had two performances there away from home where we've had, I think it's fair to say, we've had to dig in. And I'd quite like us to have like one that isn't as tested on the heart now. Do you know what I mean? And I look at Norwich and I look at where they are on the table. I look at that they've won, I think it's 4 games in the league all season, only scored 14 goals, which must be grim, by the way. When, you know, we scored 61 in the league alone. You know, I'm looking forward to hopefully a really convincing performance around what I was saying before as well about the buzz that must be in the changing room as well. So if you get a start in any position at the weekend, you're going, okay, I want to keep this spot. I want to play at Wembley. I want to play the second leg against Inter. You know, and so there's that carrot constantly dangling now for all of these players. So yeah, really excited about it.
Let's be clear, Kieran, any side that comes to Anfield in any competition needs to be treated with the utmost respect. That's the nature of this. That's the way in which it's got to be. And that's got to happen professionally. Within the club, it's got to happen at all levels. That's what Liverpool Football Club's about, and it's the way in which we'll get results. That said, Liverpool's remaining fixtures this season, they've got a game against Norwich at home, a game against Watford at home, and a game against Leeds at home. These are all sides quite emphatically at the bottom of the table. Leeds are a bit weird. Watford are managed by Hodgson. Norwich could well be Liverpool's easiest remaining game between now and the end of the season. To say that isn't to be disrespectful. It's just to rank all the teams that Liverpool face and the problems they could pose, and end up just saying if there's any one that feels as though it'll be a banker for the Reds, it's Saturday.
Definitely. Like, I mean, you know, Norwich recently battered by City. They're down the bottom of the league struggling. As you said, the other fixtures throw up some different challenges. This is a game where Liverpool should prosper. And I think we've mentioned before, like, Van Dijk looking happy when they've come through tough games. Last night was a tough game. You know, I think this is the perfect opportunity for Liverpool to benefit from all the emotions over the past couple of weeks and play the football at Anfield in a game that's not going to be, you know, like, tough as going to the San Siro. But as you say, that's why we've got this manager here, because this manager won't let anybody for a second get complacent. He won't treat anybody with anything less than the utmost respect. We've got to take each game as it comes. I know it's cliche, and I sound like one of the players or the manager there, but I feel the same. Take each game as it comes, beat Norwich on Saturday and keep moving.
Norwich have played so far, Mike, 11 games against the sides that currently occupy the top 9. Out of those 11, they have not scored a single goal. They have conceded 31, which means that they're averaging conceding in those games 3 goals a game, just shy of 3 goals a game. I'll say it again, you know, it is important that the respect is there. It is important that if Liverpool work hard, that they work as hard as they can in that game on Saturday until it feels as though the game is won. My point would be that Liverpool, if they do that, if they do show the right respect, if they do show the right work ethic, we should be looking at this by the hour mark and saying they can begin to relax a little bit now, the Reds, the job's done.
Yeah, 100%. I think it's a game where players will be looking to kind of build some momentum and form. I'm thinking about players like Mo Salah, who's come back from AFCON and looked not quite himself. And I do think if Liverpool play at their best, to their best ability, of course they're going to beat Norwich, because, you know, Liverpool are significantly better than Norwich City. So it should be a game that we sure look forward to. You know, these are all really, really important games. You can't afford to take anyone for granted, because, yeah, it's an exciting time of the season. You know, Norwich aren't obviously a great side, but we need to win these games. We need to hopefully win these games to put pressure on City, because City will trip up at some point. There's no doubt about that. It's up to us to keep winning games. We can't afford to take anyone for granted. It's used this game as a chance to build some momentum, get some more points on the board, and keep winning.
When Guardiola was referring to us as a pain in his ass, Gareth, there was he made mention that it's 6 points, the gap's 6 points. Which I suspect is a little bit of him talking to his players as well, I reckon. It's a little bit of just presume they've won that game, lads. Nothing to home and hosed here. Presume they've won that game. But the truth is that for the first time, we play first. On Saturday, and they will kick off, and hopefully the gap will be 6 points, and they then have got Tottenham. It's big Saturday, you know, and again, without being complacent about our bit of this job, which is to beat Norwich City, there's a chance Tottenham have lost today on the bounce, but I don't believe Antonio Conte is in the business of losing four league games on the bounce at any stage of a season. There's a chance Saturday that could look a little bit different than the way in which it has done recently, and there will be that moment for half an hour before kickoff where, with a bit of luck, that gap will be 6 points, and suddenly that league table will look like, yeah, let's have some of this.
And look, imagine they do slip up. Imagine what all of a sudden, how that transforms the city.
Be a heavy Saturday night, Gareth.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. But that's what I'm saying. You know, that's all it takes. Like the, you know, we were talking about it earlier in the week, weren't you? And I was saying then, you know, I don't get the sort of Devon Lock comparisons. They're not that far in front. Liverpool aren't out of this yet. And I like the vibe from Mike about, you know, be thinking about goal difference here, because look, titles have been won on goal difference before, and currently we're five behind on the goal difference. So, you know, a nice 6-0 win on Saturday, all of a sudden we turn that round. Spurs get something against City, and then we're out until Monday.
It's an option. I tell you what, it's an option if you pull it together. Gareth, what do you think he'll do with the selection? Because he does have the option. You know, you've mentioned the cup final on the horizon. I think we can say with all certainty in his current first 11, you know, his definite first 11 nailed on first 11 insofar as we can see it. Virgil van Dijk's in that team. Is there an option to rest Virgil? Do you think Virgil would stand for it? Do you think he just runs Virgil right the way through and he maybe just gets the cup fifth round off? There's a few others in there. Are you expecting anything left field, or do you think it'll be the lads you'd expect with maybe three or four changes?
Yeah, that I think with Virgil, I think he wants to play. I think we've got to take that into consideration in the modern game more than we used to in the past. Like, players don't just take fully getting dictated to anymore, I don't think. And there are certain players, I'll probably say Mo's one of them as well, where you've got to consider what he wants. Like, Mo wants to play every single fucking game for Liverpool. And if he's dropped or he's on the bench or whatever, he's not happy. And you want him to be happy. And he's got incredible fitness, etc. I actually think Virgil plays better as well when he's in the rhythm, and he's looking like he's starting to be in the rhythm. I've seen in the comments before, like, he's got his turbocharger back, and it does feel a little bit like that. I mean, maybe he read them weird comments from Paolo Di Canio and thought, well, I'll show you, lad. I like to think so. But, you know, he's in his rhythm, so why would you remove him? And Liverpool are a better side when he's in the side. And so I think maybe you see Matip come back in for Konate. I think it's the usual lads at fullback. And look, I think, you know, they're probably playing, even if the fitness levels aren't where they are for some of them, there's just the adrenaline currently of the feel-good, of the cup final on the horizon. You'd expect Henderson, I think, to come back in after his cameo, because it was a good cameo. Fabinho, for me, currently is another one who's a little bit like Van Dijk, where you just have him in. I just think we're a better side when he's about, and you can do the "it's only Norwich" shout, but then you can do what you've already said, which is get the game won, use your subs around 60, and, you know, bring on a load more hungry lads on 60. A tired Norwich defence going, fucking hell, we're already 3-0 down, and now you're bringing them on, are you? I'd like to think we might see Diaz start. He said that before, and I like to think that will happen, because I think he deserves it. I think if you do meritocracy stuff, then he's shown enough so far that he deserves a start at Anfield.
It'd be nice to see Diaz start, wouldn't it, Keo? In there, I think that'd be great. I think at some point it'd be good to see Gomez get a bit of time on the pitch, but he might have to wait for the cup game. And then in there as well, you know, Kite has had a couple of good performances, but Chamberlain is meant to have picked up a little bit of a knock at one point in there. He's got so many options in midfield, but I would like to see Diaz start.
Yeah, definitely. I think the point about Keita there is a good one. I mean, Naby's frustrated a lot of people over the past couple of years with, you know, consistency issues, and he's in a run of form here. He's putting it in, and I think I'd like to see him play at the weekend. But Diaz is the one for me, the main one I'd like to see, because I think the goal comes at the weekend if he starts. He's done everything when he's been on the pitch that we could ask of him. He wants the ball, he gets up players, so... Yeah, I think we'll see him at the weekend. I do think Klopp will play him. But similar to what Gareth said, I think it's a case of playing our strongest team and getting to 60 minutes and being able to pull them off, as opposed to, you know, being at 60 minutes at 0-0, not going our way and trying to bring players on to affect it.
Without knowing with Jota, I don't think they're going to want to risk anyone, Mike, at this stage, and certainly not for Norwich at home. You know, it isn't a cup final. What that begs the question of, I take Gareth's point completely around Salah will want to play, he'll be desperate to play. That's the sort of the nature of who he is. You nodded along with a lot of the Diaz chat, Mike. So it throws up to me a little bit of an interesting one as to who might start number nine. I'd love to see them maybe look at starting Sadio there and having him get a game through the middle of the pitch at home. Not to criticise for me, you know, off the back of the excellent header, but I feel as though with the nature of what Norwich are going to do, which is sit so deep, the idea of needing a bridge between attack and midfield, I just don't think we quite need that at home very often. And Firmino offers that, and he does that really, really well, I think, at times. But he hasn't scored a goal at Anfield in the Premier League for 14 months. You know, for me, I do wonder if it might be an interesting one to just have this unbelievable amount of pace and ball carrying. Diaz one side, Salah the other, through the middle, Sadio.
Yeah, I would start that front three, because I think what you can afford to do against Norwich is not taking them for granted or anything, but you can afford to try a few things.
Have a little look.
Have a little look. See if Mane is a number nine might be something you want to look at long term. So I'd absolutely would do that. I think Diaz definitely deserves a start, because it is a game that you'd expect him to not be. It's not going to be the most testing game of his Liverpool career against Norwich at home on Saturday. It'll be a nice game for him to build momentum. On Salah and Mane, I think they both need to start, partly because they both have looked a bit off. Yep. It'd be nice to get them right ahead of the cup final. So I think I would start them against both Norwich and Leeds. I wouldn't give them the full 90 in both games. I'd probably take Salah off around 70 against Norwich, around 70 against Leeds as well. But I definitely would give them both games. So it'll be nice to kind of see Mane play number nine, because he has played there before for us, I think, but fleetingly. But it'd be nice to maybe see that from the start against Norwich to see how that looks.
I'm not going to ask you for predictions or even scoreline predictions, because we'll all sound a bit daft, and well, I think we might also all sound a little bit cocky. It's a game that'll take some winning. The key thing about it, Gareth, is that they come through unscathed. It comes through straightforward. That ultimately we are able to settle down and watch Manchester City against Tottenham, just knowing we've done our job. It's an important day Saturday for our wider ambitions, and for once that's not entirely dictated by what we do.
Yeah, absolutely. And like you say, it's just nice that it's flipped a little bit. I mean, you know, whatever Pep's reason is for mentioning us, I think it's good for us. It's good for our support. It's good. We've all shared it with our mates this week and gone, we're in his head and all that kind of stuff. And even if we're not, I just think that's good. Like, let's get this vibe going around what we're doing. I was thinking before, you know, in a way, a weird way, I don't know, I might sound a little bit weird, but I don't want us to get complacent about that second leg against Inter. I almost wish there was a little bit more riding on it, because I wanted a massive Anfield night, and yeah, I wanted like a greeting the coach and all that kind of stuff to get everyone buzzing about this team, because I still feel like there's a little bit of people aren't letting themselves go enough. I don't know whether that's just because they're a little bit down about what we've all lived through, or whether they're a little bit down about, you know, City dominating football and isn't it a bit boring. But we've got chances to lay one on their chin this season right now. So, like, let's get behind them. Let's make that happen. Let's play our part. And let's get in there and support their heads on Saturday. Like I said before, you know, Norwich in other circumstances could be the one where it's a little bit quiet and, you know, different people go because they can't be bothered and all that kind of gear that we've seen so many times. For years, by the way, in different eras. It's gone on forever. But I just hope everyone's sort of human nature around this now is like, there's something building, so let's be part of what we're building here.
Are you anywhere before the match on Saturday, Keo?
Yeah, I'm in the sand and I'm on day release from prison. so yeah, I'll be playing in the sand and I'll be getting everyone up for it like I normally do. And I agree with Gareth there. Like, it's there's no, like I said before, there's moments in season that we look back where we start to feel something special is happening. And it was the FA Cup game last week. Come out and think, I thought, I can't remember us ever fighting on four fronts at this point in the season. I looked into it and we hadn't before, you know what I mean? It's been a long time since we've been fighting on all fronts. So, yeah, something special is happening. We do need to get behind the team. And like I say, even if we don't catch City and they do keep winning every game, being boring, then we've got a potential cup treble on. You know what I mean? It could be 2001 again, but this time with the European Cup instead. So there's definitely a lot to shout about and a lot to get behind the team for.
There absolutely is. Listen, thank you very much indeed to Gareth, to Keo and to Mike. Check out Keo there on Saturday in the Sandon before it all starts, before it all goes off. And hopefully it is a rambunctious one against Norwich, an enjoyable one against Norwich. Hopefully there is everything we want to possibly get behind. Subscribe to the Anfield Wrap. Download the app and you can check out everything for free in amongst there. Once you download the app, you'll get some tokens. Listen to whatever you like. Loads of great stuff post-match after the Inter Milan game. Loads to look forward to. A cup final on the horizon. Thank you again, Mike, Keo, Gareth. In elsewhere, we had Sam, we had Harriet, we had Matt and we had John. It has been your tour live this week. Liverpool are on all fronts. They are going to go all the way. Never been a better time. Sports Social Podcast Network.